Uncertainty isn't just a challenge, it's a call to adapt. At Tagoras, we help organizations navigate disruption with clarity and confidence. Whether it's making smarter decisions about your portfolio, understanding shifting market dynamics, or identifying new opportunities for growth, we bring deep experience in strategy, market assessment, and lifelong learning. If you're looking to build a more resilient, responsive learning business, we're here to help. Learn more at tagoras.com/clarity.
Part of the value of any learning experience is determined by the return on investment of the time spent learning.
I'm Salisa Steele.
I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast. Hey, Salisa, do you have a minute?
I'd say that depends on what it's for.
Yeah, and there's the rub. It seems like as consumers, as parents or partners, as colleagues, as professionals, really just as individuals alive in today's world, we're constantly being asked for some of our time.
And as a learning business, we're often part of the crowd clamoring for people's time. We're competing for the very limited resources of people's time and attention.
So in today's episode, number 434, we want to focus on the small matter of time when it comes to learning and when it comes to being in a learning business.
So time is one of the most valuable resources we have as humans, and learning requires time, yet many people feel they don't have enough time.
Indeed, and conversations that we've had with learning business leaders over a very long period of time, it's common to hear that their learners, whether they're professionals in industries like healthcare, finance, or education, or really in any sort of field or profession, they frequently struggle to find time for ongoing learning.
And I think that complaint about there not being enough time has been a big driver for different formats and learning businesses trying to try things out like micro learning, like podcasts. And I actually was on a panel recently at CME Palooza about CME podcasts, and a big part of the attraction of the podcast format for healthcare practitioners is that they don't have to be at their desk. So that it sort of allows them to maximize their time.
Yeah, and you mentioned microlearning. I mean, this is a huge driver of all of the buzz around microlearning. I know, just because people feel like if you can get the learning into those short chunks, that maybe, just maybe, you can convince people to give up a little bit of their time for learning. But that brings us to a brutal truth when it comes to time and learning.
Yes, that it's limited and learning does require time. So we've got kind of a double whammy there. We have to have it if we're going to help our learners learn. They have to spend some time, and they feel like they don't have enough time. So all of this leads to really kind of a double-barreled question, you know, which is how do learning businesses secure a share of people's limited time? And then how can they help learners make the most of the time that they do invest with them?
Indeed. So let's start with that sort of reigning truth that time is necessary for learning. I mean, we have to face that. That is a fact.
Right. Learning is not a quick fix activity, or maybe for some very micro skills, it could be a quick activity. But in general, anything that you're trying to do that's going to result in deep learning requires sustained time and effort.
Yeah, we're not quite at the Matrix yet. I mean, whenever I see that movie, and I think Neo has to learn to fly a helicopter at some point, you know, and they just plug him in and he gets everything he needs, skills, knowledge, experience to be able to fly whatever the machine is that he's supposed to be flying. I can't remember exactly what it is, but I look at that and I'm like, wow, you know, if somebody could plug that guitar knowledge in for me or something like that, I'd take it in a minute.
But we're not quite there.
We're not quite there yet.
And so we know that there are things like spaced repetition and deliberate practice. Those are evidence-based strategies that we know are very effective for learning. And they're also strategies that acknowledge the important role of time in learning. I mean, with spaced repetition, it's this idea of revisiting key concepts or information or skills periodically. With deliberate practice, it's also about making sure that when you do carve out time for practice, that you're practicing in an intentional and focused way.
Yeah, I mean, the great thing about spaced repetition and deliberate practice is they start to tell us some things about how we can use time effectively, how we can make more effective use of our times. Because, you know, time is essential, but many learners, as we know, are just sort of conditioned to seek out quick wins or cramming sessions. This starts in elementary school and high school, certainly goes into college, you know, where you just cram everything you can into a study period. And that can work in the short term if you just need to pass an exam. But if you need to actually retain something, memorize it, be able to use it over time, that doesn't work, you know. So knowing that spacing things out, knowing that being deliberate starts to point towards how we might manage our time more effectively when it comes to learning.
Right. And I think all of this speaks to our view that learning businesses have a role to play in helping learners shift away from a mindset of quick results to a more sustainable, time-conscious approach to learning, and that learning businesses can really help emphasize the value of creating a culture where the time spent on learning is seen as really important and seen as an investment, you know, not just as an expense, right?
Right. And as a high return investment, because you're gonna tell them, you're gonna help them understand how to get the most out of that time investment so they really are learning. So, you know, there's that reality that we're not gonna help people learn if some time isn't gonna be used for learning. But then that does raise this question. People need their time for a lot of things. We are competing for learners' time as learning businesses. So how do we think about that?
Well, I think one important thing to realize is that, yes, we're competing for people's time, and we're not just competing for their learning time.
Right, right.
I think very few people compartmentalize their time that carefully. You know, typically what we're competing with is also the time they have for work, the time they have for family, the time they have for exercise, the time they have for relaxation or entertainment. And so we're not just kind of competing against other learning providers, we're competing against life.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I had the discipline to compartmentalize my time in some way like that, where I could say, you know, here's the amount of time I have allotted this day at this period of time, and this is when I will plug in this learning business's learning to help me. But as you said, that's just not what's happening out there. And of course, before we can hope to get a share of people's time in most instances, because they haven't necessarily said this is the time when this is going to happen, we have to get their attention.
Yes, and it's challenging to get people's attention because attention requires some time.
Right. And there are a lot of things that want your attention. I mean, we're at the time of this podcast, we happen to be in an election season, and I don't know how many messages I'm getting in my email box and my smartphone right now from candidates who want my attention. You know, of course, they want money, but that sort of stuff is flowing all over the place. Messages from friends and family and advertisements and just the stuff of life.
So I think learning businesses can and should keep this time-strapped mentality that a lot of learners bring to your marketing, to your learning experiences in mind. And so when you're developing, you've got to kind of keep that reality, as unpleasant as it is, in mind, because we have to recognize that our learners, for the most part, usually do feel very time-strapped.
And I think there's an opportunity, you know, to build goodwill there if you are creating those bite-sized learning experiences, micro-learning, which generally speaking is a good thing to be looking at. We're in favor of a well-done micro-learning. You know, if you're creating asynchronous learning experiences, so they're not time-bound, if you're creating mobile-friendly platforms like podcasts so they can be done at any time, well, first of all, you're creating situations where learners do have some autonomy around when they're going to engage with you and how they're going to engage with you. Just a great practice from a learning business standpoint. But by doing those things, you're also automatically creating a certain amount of implicit goodwill that you understand these challenges that your learners have.
Right. So this reality of how time-strapped our learners are has direct implications for formats that might show up in our portfolio. I think we also need to keep the time-strapped point of view or mentality in mind when we're promoting our learning products as well, because again, that gets back to even before someone's going to engage with that micro-learning segment that you have or listen to that podcast episode, you first have to get their attention. So that means we also have to keep that in mind when we're talking about the learning we're hoping they will engage in, when we're marketing it and promoting it.
Yeah, and I see it's at least two sides to that, and there are probably more. But one is, you know, we for a long time have advocated just good copywriting, knowing how to write to create in a way that is going to get people's attention. It's the, you know, we've talked about the ADA model before in the past, and sort of applying it to learning is that attention, interest, desire, and action. And maybe you've got a marketing team you can count on to help you do that. If you do, then certainly, you know, work with them to do that. If not, then, you know, within your learning business staff, you know, as you're writing those course descriptions, as you're writing the email messages you're sending out, you've got to be able to write in a way that gets people's attention, or create videos in a way, or whatever, however you're messaging. And then in the messaging itself, I think making it clear that you get it, that you understand that the time is valuable, and clearly conveying how, in whatever amount of time you're asking for, you are going to deliver tremendous value. You're going to help get that big return on investment as effectively and as efficiently as possible out of the amount of time that you're able to get from that prospective learner. At Tagoras, we partner with professional and trade associations, continuing education units, training firms, and other learning businesses to help them understand market realities and potential, to connect better with existing customers and find new ones, and to make smart investment decisions around product development and portfolio management. Drawing on our expertise in lifelong learning, market assessment, and strategy formulation, we can help you achieve greater reach, revenue, and impact. Learn more at tagoras.com/more.
Implicit in what you're saying there, Jeff, is that there's both a quality aspect of time and a quantity aspect, right? So we've been talking about how people feel time-strapped. I mean, that's the quantity side, right? And we can't wave a magic wand and suddenly give people extra hours in the day. And just making a sheer quantity argument of like, hey, you should spend more.
Buckle up.
just spend more of your time learning out of your limited 24 hours a day. That's not going to get us very far. So I think that we do need to shift the focus away from a discussion or kind of, you know, edicts to just find time, to more about that quality of the time spent. So it's not just logging hours, but it's engaging meaningfully with the material.
And the fact is, you know, high quality learning experiences can actually reduce the time required for learning efficiently, learning effectively, by promoting deeper understanding and retention in less time. And that's part of our role as learning businesses. You know, we can enhance the quality of learning through interactive content, through real-world application, or through community engagement, and using those tools that ensure when the learner does have an interaction, that interaction has been very well designed to get learning results.
That's right. This is where we can rely on learning science. We can look at evidence-backed strategies and make use of those when we're designing and delivering our learning programs. For example, building in practice and also allowing some autonomy in, say, a project that might be part of a learning experience, doing those things can help make that time spent contribute, yes, to deeper learning, but also potentially to helping that learner actually get something done that they have to do for work anyway. And so you can kind of then have that 1 hour of time, if that might be the example, it's kind of doing double duty. Yes, they're learning and they're also making progress on some task that they need to do for work. This is something we tried to do in presenting for impact.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, build that into your learning experiences. And, you know, and to remember too, that if you're designing learning experiences well in the first place, and you're taking advantage of the evidence-based, science-based approaches to it, I mean, you're helping to provide the framework that are going to give learners confidence, that are going to help them really feel and see the progress they're making. I mean, I know in my own experience, for example, in trying to get better at the guitar, if you're somebody who's played a musical instrument, and this applies to all sorts of hobbies and avocations, you know, you probably do a lot of sort of floundering and noodling around over time. And we do this in our professional lives too, where we don't really have the structure, we don't really have the pathway, we don't kind of know what to focus on and how to focus on it in a way that's going to really give results. And I've found at the points in time where I've been able to figure out, oh, if I engage in these types of activities in this way, spaced out over time, I'm going to see tremendous results. And once you do that as a learner and you understand that that works, that that's possible, and you find a source who can provide that for you on a consistent basis, which is what a successful learning business should do, you're going to go back to that source because of the effectiveness, the efficiency, the return that you're able to get off of the time that you're spending in working with the learning opportunities that they're providing.
Right. I think what you're talking about there is that if you can find a learning experience that helps you be intentional and that delivers that impact, you're seeing those results pretty quickly. That's, yes, a resource you're going to want to go back to again. Just to explain a little bit more, when I said that we do this in Presenting for Impact, we have a training, a course that we offer for instructors. And I think you can use the course just kind of independently to try to up your game as a presenter. But we also encourage folks going through it to actually work on a presentation as they go through it. So again, you have that sort of maybe 1 hour of investment in the course. But if you're actually coming out then with a solid draft of a presentation you had to come up with anyway, then that hour spent sort of does double duty.
Yeah. And you know, part of that is educating the learner on why that a little bit, because in that case, you know, we're saying, well, you could sit there for an hour and just watch, or you can invest a little bit more time actually doing this stuff as you go through it. And guess what? A, you're going to finish something that you need to finish, and B, you're going to retain it and actually be able to use it for so much longer. And making sure the learners understand that, you know, that when you're making those asks, that there is a very concrete and high value reason for it. And we often don't do enough to help our learners understand learning and be good learners.
I'm thinking there's probably a parallel in all of this with fitness. For the most part, people understand that to get in better shape, they're going to have to spend some time actually working out or exercising. Now, there may still be some snake oil salespeople out there who are trying to say, here, just do this in your sleep or whatever. But for the most part, I think people who want to improve their physical fitness get that they have to spend some time doing that.
Yeah. But then, you know, often in those cases, it's useful to have a coach, it's useful to have somebody to structure that for you to help you spend that time in the right way. Because, I mean, I go to a gym occasionally. I don't know how many people I see, and they're bouncing from machine to machine, and maybe they're getting some results, maybe they're not. They're probably not going to be in the gym 6 months later because they haven't really gotten where they want to go. But we can, as learning businesses, we can help provide the structure and the understanding for our learners to get the most out of the experiences.
Right. We can be like the coaches or the personal trainers. We can be like the workout regimen that helps the learners get to that next stage.
Right.
I think that part of what learning businesses can do in thinking through time is helping to think through what does time well spent look like in the context of learning, and how can we as learning businesses frame our offerings so that learners do feel like the time they spend is valuable and productive. And so we've been talking a little bit about some of the practical ways, but maybe we can talk a little bit more about some ways that we've seen learning businesses do this.
Yeah, we've been hinting at some of these things. So for example, learning paths and curated content, you know, these are ways to help get learners to the right content and then to the right next content efficiently and clearly. This kind of goes back to the kind of guitar type example I was talking about. Like, I've always struggled to find the right learning pathway in learning guitar. And when I do happen to latch onto one, those are when I make the big leaps forward. So, you know, we want to make sure that learners can clearly see that the time that's spent on learning isn't going to be spent on just trying to identify the appropriate opportunities. We've already got the appropriate opportunities there for them, and then we're helping them to really take advantage of those opportunities.
That's right. So if you have a really good, well-curated portfolio, and if that portfolio makes really clear different learning pathways, you know, if you're new to the profession, here's what you should be taking, or if you're trying to make the leap to management, here's what you should be taking. Anything we can do to make the right content very clear for that learner helps, because then that means they're not spending the time trying to identify the content. Instead, they get to spend time learning that content, engaging with that material, and trying to apply it.
Yeah, you know, and subscriptions or any sort of bundling can be another example of this. It's just, you know, it's helping to reduce that time and energy that can be spent on just deciding what to learn or what to enroll in, and instead channeling that time into actively engaging with the right content that's been presented there for you to engage with.
And then we touched on earlier, but I think building in opportunities for application, building in practice opportunities. We have an executive briefing about the role of practice in learning. Anything that you can do to really help the learner begin to apply and begin to see the real connection between the material and their day-to-day work is going to be huge, because then the time away from work to participate in a course then becomes time on work. You know, it's something very clearly that they're going to be able to move more quickly through what they need to do and more effectively through what they need to do on the job.
Yeah. many learning businesses, an increasing number, do put the time in to create personas of the people who they are trying to serve. I think something that I don't often see really focused on with personas is, how is that person perceiving and managing time? What are their time challenges? And then from the standpoint of the learning business, how do we create in a way that connects and helps alleviate this person's time challenges in the items that we're creating for our portfolio and the learning experiences we're creating, whether it's micro-learning or pathways or some of these things we're talking about? And then also, how do we message to that person in a way that tells them, we get this, we've got your back, we are in fact going to help you take that very limited amount of time that we know is so challenging for you to manage and just really get a huge amount out of it when you use some of that time to engage with the learning experiences we provide. Part of the value of any learning experience is determined by the return on investment of the time spent learning. So as good stewards of your learner's time, think about how you can create more impactful learning experiences that maximize the value delivered.
At leadinglearning.com/episode434, you'll find show notes, a transcript, and options for subscribing to the podcast. If you haven't yet, please do subscribe.
And we'd be grateful if you would take a minute to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, especially if you enjoy the show. Salise and I personally appreciate reviews and ratings, and they help the podcast show up when others search for content on leading a learning business.
And please spread the word about Leading Learning. You can do that in a one-on-one conversation or email to a colleague, and you can do it through social media. In the show notes at leadinglearning.com/episode434, you can follow the link to connect with us on LinkedIn.
Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.